Start your day with Morning Edition and wind it down with All Things Considered, only on KPBS. From global headlines to local stories, stay informed, inspired, and connected. Tune in daily or listen anytime at kpbs.org.
Just like Six Flags, huh? Nice bumpy up and down.
This past summer, our producer Julio took to the skies in a small 5-passenger plane to survey the San Diego-Tijuana border region. At the controls was Captain Gary Kraft of EcoFlight.
We're going to get a pretty good view of the river and the canal.
Woo! Here we go.
He and a small group of journalists took off from Brownfield Municipal Airport near the Otay Mesa Port of Entry, San Diego County's eastern gate into the U.S.
We'll go out towards the estuary first. We'll come back along the border here.
They were there to get a bird's eye view of the region to better understand the environmental issues impacting both sides of the border.
From that height, you could appreciate the entire Tijuana River watershed and the cross-border geography, including the Tijuana River's roughly 118-mile course from its headwaters in Mexico into the U.S.
Well, you guys should be getting a good view of the estuary down right below us.
Leading the tour was Waylon Mattson, environmentalist and co-founder of Four Walls, a nonprofit that works on environmental solutions for problems faced by marginalized communities.
From the plane window, the sea shimmered and the Tijuana River snaked through to the Tijuana estuary.
One of the largest remaining natural coastal wetlands in Southern California.
Now we're going over Mataderos Canyon, probably the best view. San Diego and Tijuana. This is Los Laureles Canyon right here. That's where I spend a little bit of time.
During this plane ride, Waylon pointed to the different landmarks where the watershed crosses the border, as the water flows from Tijuana downstream to different points in San Diego County.
Yeah, there's the Línea, no stop out.
Yeah,
no stop.
As they were flying over the San Isidro International Port of Entry, Waylon pointed to a semicircle of what looked like little squares looping from one side of the Tijuana River to the other.
Yeah, there's a Romo's trash boom. Woo-woo!
A floating barrier system was implemented by one of Waylon's former collaborators. It was designed to also keep the trash from flowing north.
The rivers, canyons, and estuaries know no borders.
And with all that water, my friends, comes pollution. Tons and tons of it daily.
This week's storm sent more than 14.5 billion gallons of untreated raw sewage into California from Mexico. Levels officials say have never been seen before.
Mexico has a faulty sewage system that's dumping sewage into our part of the ocean. And the Pacific Ocean's not looking too good on many occasions.
Cross-border pollution has been a bit of a sore spot between the two countries for years. Just weeks before this episode was published, President Donald Trump took to social media to demand action.
Quote, Mexico must take care of its water and sewage problem immediately. It is a true threat to the people of Texas, California, and the United States of America.
Today, we speak with four fronterizos who rolled up their sleeves and took matters into their own hands to fill in the void left by governments on both sides.
They've dedicated their life's work to address this problem that's affecting millions of people in the region.
If this is the first time you are tuning in, we're showcasing people with out-of-the-box solutions to everyday problems.
This season is all about visionaries and shapers of the borderlands. Today, we're talking about cross-border pollution and those who've dedicated their life's work to contain it or repurpose it.
The Planetary Scale, Part 4, Slowing the Flow.
Redux. Stay tuned. From KPBS, this is Port of Entry,
where we tell cross-border stories that connect us.
I'm Alan Lilienthal.
And I'm Natalie Gonzalez.
KPBS On Demand is supported by the San Diego County Toyota Dealers, presenting a new 2025 Tundra designed to combine performance and comfort with up to 437 horsepower and 10-speed automatic transmission. See your Toyota dealer, the San Diego County Toyota Dealers. We make it easy.
You are listening to Port of Entry. Stopping the flow of pollution can feel like a Sisyphean task. with every effort to tackle it, more trash seems to appear. That's why addressing the pollution crisis at the border takes a multi-pronged approach. It involves many different types of interventions, from trash barriers to hillside reforestation to trash collection and repurposing efforts.
Months before the plane ride, Julio made his way down to the Tijuana River in the U.S. side, near the South Bay International Wastewater Treatment Plant, and not far from the Tijuana River estuary.
He was headed to the riverbed, right where the Tijuana River crosses the international borderline to a concrete-lined canal beside the border fence, locally known as El Bordo.
Gray silt covered the riverbed.
This is silt coming from Tijuana.
This is the Rio Tijuana.
This is the Rio Tijuana.
Right here.
Right, we are in the middle of the Tijuana River.
He was there to meet environmentalist Oscar Romo,
the project manager behind the trash booms that Waylon pointed out from the sky during the plane tour. Romo was wearing a bright orange raincoat and his signature beret. He pointed to the contaminated silt that made its way across the border, along with heavier trash.
I would say this silt is full of toxics. That water, you can tell by the color, that is
pretty polluted.
Extremely polluted.
Julio's boots would sink an inch deep in the gray silt as he was walking towards Oscar's installation site.
The air smelled of raw sewage. Debris was scattered along the riverbed. Tires, plastic containers, furniture, toys, all of it coming from Tijuana's urban sprawl.
The pollution is highly concentrated, and you don't know what you're going to find. They're industrial residues.
According to Romo, waste from junk cars and small maquiladoras, along with sewage, is being dumped into the Tijuana River on the Mexican side, often illegally and in the cover of night. That's been widely documented by local and federal agencies.
And especially on the first storm, which we're expecting in a couple of weeks, the water brings all kinds of things. Furniture, carcasses, hospital waste, industrial waste.
Romo founded Alter Terra, a conservation nonprofit, over 2 decades ago. He spearheaded a number of different conservation projects, but is now focused on one mission:
stopping the flow of trash from entering San Diego. Julio and Romo drove to Romo's worksite.
We're deploying these barriers. So we have contractors helping us with that.
In the middle of the riverbed, a crew of workers were installing the trash booms.
Julio had met Oscar Romo previously when Romo was presenting his research and interventions at a cross-border symposium in 2024.
Some of the things I do is like trash booms, which is structures that are put in creeks and rivers to prevent the flow of trash. Philosophically, I'm using trash to control the flow of trash.
These booms have stopped about 50 tons of debris in the most recent storm, and according to Romo, 500 tons of heavy debris just in the last 2024-25 storm season.
We are about half a mile from where the river crosses from Mexico to the U.S.
The concrete Tijuana Canal that runs through the whole city of Tijuana continues on to the American side. The concrete floor is buried by topsoil runoff. Polluted silt and vegetation cover different parts.
And we place these heavy concrete blocks. We have about 97 tons of weight to hold these heavy-duty threaded cables. And these cables are going to hold 160 individual trash barriers.
The trash barriers had 2 industrial-sized barrel drums installed inside to help them float.
And the shell is made of this plastic collected in Tijuana from mostly from illegal dump sites.
The trash boom shell resembles something like a Jackson Pollock painting, color fused over other colors.
A semicircle of these trash booms would stretch from one side of the river to the other.
And it's also designed for hydrodynamism to prevent them from sinking. We want them afloat, because the purpose of this project is to remove the floating trash.
A set of booms were lined up and stacked on the side of the riverbed, ready to be deployed.
Yeah, we're going to have just like those, one next to the other one, and they're attached by some riggings also. So there will be almost no space between them. So we're creating a floating barrier.
This is a project that Romo has been working to get funding for quite a while.
It was recommended probably 10 years ago, but it took another 10 years to finally get the funding for it.
Romo was installing the pilot project thanks to a grant he was able to secure.
Yesterday, Governor Gavin Newsom announced a pilot project to use floating trash booms to catch garbage flowing in from Mexico. The governor has proposed $4.7 million to keep those nets in place for the next two storm systems.
The State Water Resources Control Board reported that in addition to installing Romo's floating booms, it will also collect data on rainwater conditions, trash accumulation, and any necessary repairs to the booms, all with the goal of improving trash management and water quality in the Tijuana River. This initiative will be conducted over two storm seasons.
Putting it together hasn't been easy, says Romo, but the success the Trash Boom project has seen has secured the trust of the state to keep funding it past its 2026 deadline and has even considered implementing it in other parts of the state like LA.
The trash booms will operate until 2027. Romo is currently awaiting a response from the Water Commission regarding an extension to his contract through 2030, in the hopes this pilot becomes permanent infrastructure.
But Oscar Romo's trash booms isn't the only type of intervention project being implemented in the region. There is similar work being done south of the border aimed at slowing the flow of pollution before it even makes it across.
And exactly what kind of intervention is being implemented across the border?
Trash collection and repurposing, along with river basin surveys and hillside canyon reforestation.
Trash repurposing, that is, turning trash into something useful or beautiful, isn't necessarily something unique to Tijuana, but it's something that has definitely flourished here.
An example of that is Adela Bonilla of Los Laureles.
Los Laureles is a community nestled in the westmost canyon of the Tijuana watershed, right across the Tijuana estuary and south of the border to Imperial Beach.
There, in Los Laureles, Adela operates a small-scale workshop.
El Taller de Adela.
Spanish for Adela's Workshop. On the way to Los Laureles, Tijuana's iconic makeshift houses pepper the slopes of the canyon, and beneath them, informal trash dump sites.
Hola, Adela.
Hola.
¿Qué tal? Buenos días.
This isn't our first visit to Adela's. We were here 6 years ago when Waylon first introduced us to Adela and her project. Back then, we highlighted how Waylon's nonprofit was helping mobilize the Los Laureles community around trash collection and repurposing.
And Adela was key in that effort.
Adela is a craft master. She makes a living making piñatas from repurposed material, but since then, she's moved on to crafting other things.
Like plastic wallets and notebooks.
From outside, plants of all kinds line the perimeter of Adela's workshop.
Next to the workshop was Adela's porch patio, a backlog of industrial-sized trash bags full of plastic bottles and water jug caps were lined up next to a conventional kitchen oven, all waiting to be melted.
Aquí le llaman la casa de las botellas.
La casa de las botellas.
Sí, porque el taller de Adela.
Her workshop is nicknamed the Bottle House because it was built using repurposed plastic bottles filled with plastic debris as a sort of eco-brick.
Porque todas las paredes son hechas de botellas plásticas rellenas de basura.
¿Estas paredes, estos muros?
Sí.
Adentro hay botellas,
botellas de plástico de 600.
Como si fueran...
And also because tinted glass bottles are embedded in the walls of the workshop, acting like a sort of wall light. It gave the inside of the workshop a warm glow, tinted with green, yellow, red, and white hues.
Y esta pues es botella de vidrio. De vino, de cerveza, de tequila, de... de todo. De todo un poco.
It took Adela and her community 26 days to construct the bottle brick workshop.
They used 3,638 individual plastic bottles, which were filled with plastic debris and stacked together before being plastered with cement.
Lo rellenamos con cemento. La idea principal era que fuera con adobe. Pero como fue con 26 días nada más tuvimos para la construcción. Entonces no fue, sí, no fue posible.
The inside of Adela's workshop was crowded with Adela's work equipment. Equipment that was donated to her and that she uses to teach others. A couple of heat presses, paper guillotines, a sewing machine, and many boxes with some of Adela's work that was ready to be delivered.
She sources the material from the collection efforts of the neighborhood. Her neighbors leave the material they know she needs in front of her porch.
Los mismos vecinos hay veces que traen el plástico y pues ellos igual van a la basura, ¿no?
She also sources the plastic from maquiladoras or recycling plants every other week.
Voy cada 15 días, cada mes me traigo 15, 20 bolsas.
Adela remembers the time before the intervention projects. Trash would pile up on the canal.
Sí, porque todo eso era basurero. O sea, todos los carros que juntan basuras en otros lados venían y ahí en el canal tiraban el escombro, la basura, árboles y todo eso.
Determined to make a difference, Adela took matters into her own hands. She helped lead brigades focus on trash collection and repurposing in her community. She has lost track of how much trash she's collected.
No tengo idea, pero sí fue bastante.
It's just been a lot, she says. Adela had always been trying to find ways to repurpose trash in Los Laureles. But when she met Waylon and the Four Walls team, that's when she got the support she needed to scale up her operation.
They joined forces to try to clean up Los Laureles by helping folks help themselves.
With the support of Waylon's and other nonprofit organizations, they installed trash and sediment traps in the canal to reduce the flow of debris. Debris that would eventually find its way downstream into the U.S. After capturing that debris, community members would sort the trash and keep what was suitable for repurposing.
Entonces es traer el material, lavarlo, limpiarlo, porque aunque lo laves, pues hay que secarlo bien para poderlo meter a la temperatura.
And the cool thing was that they managed to pay community members for all that work. This was financed by grants and investments procured by Waylon and other nonprofits.
Their efforts were always to mobilize the community to pick up the trash repurposing habit.
Yo tuve un grupo de mujeres aquí conmigo. Fueron 15. Pero se fueron saliendo poco a poco porque
Adela's workshop used to have more community members involved. At one point, her workshop was 15 women strong.
But those helping hands trickled away over the last years.
Poco porque pues lógico, no queremos trabajar y ganar al momento, pero aquí es de que si vendes ganas y si no no ganas.
Adela mentioned the need for a consistent revenue stream for these women to continue working, which posed a significant challenge for her and Waylon in retaining participants.
According to Adela, you only get what you can sell.
Pero sí aprenden. Por ejemplo, ahorita acá arriba hay una señora que hace piñatas cuando no sabía hacer y aquí aprendió. Gracias a Dios.
In hindsight, some of the women picked up the craft and are now selling their own creations, like piñatas.
Entonces, normalmente me gusta, pues que la gente aprenda. No sé, no quiero ser la única loca.
Today, Adela and her family manage the workshop, supported by Waylon and various other nonprofits that commission her crafts. Despite the challenges that ultimately hindered the operation, Adela couldn't scale her initiative without the support of Waylon Madsen and Four Walls. They've been involved with Las Botellas and other projects in Los Laureles community.
The impact Adela has made in her community is difficult to measure, as many she mentored have either moved away or left to pursue more stable income sources. Nonetheless, the hard work has completely transformed the community since they began. What was once a dump site at the intersection of the canal and her street is now a small park with green spaces.
Bancas, pero hechas con botellas, rellenas de basura.
Adela shared that new structures, such as park benches, are being planned using her expertise in trash repurposing. Today, Adela continues to welcome those interested in learning the craft, offering a potential new livelihood.
More than a decade after its construction, Adela's workshop still stands strong beside the mountain slope as a remarkable reminder of how a community can coalesce around trash repurposing.
And whatever effort happens at the source upstream, for instance, in Los Laureles, benefits communities downstream, north of the border. And that's exactly Waylon's approach.
6 years after our first visit, pollution across the border continues. This month, December 2025, the U.S. and Mexico signed a new agreement aimed at addressing the sewage crisis.
But for years, nonprofits like Waylands have been doing much of the groundwork. We wanted to check back in with him to see where those efforts stand.
How's it going, brother?
Buenas tardes.
Buenas tardes, señor.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
Doing good, man.
Waylon invited us on a ground tour of the watershed, including some old stomping grounds of Waylon's in Los Laureles. Julio tagged along for the ride.
Well, Laureles is, it gets a lot of attention because its proximity to the tidal wetlands, which are super valuable for environmental services. And then it's also a place where urban sprawl is like easily documented.
Waylon explained that the settlement has developed over the past 15 to 30 years, growing from a small informal community of hundreds to nearly 100,000 people residing in just one canyon.
Like a microcosm of all the other sub-basins that are contributing to this problem anyways.
He perceives what happens in Los Laureles as an example of what takes place in other parts of the watershed that have uncontrolled trash problems and erosion of soil.
We created a hydrofinancial model that we really saw as like a tool to really share with downstream beneficiaries the opportunity to invest in Mexico at the source and not have to deal with the long-term mitigation of the transboundary sediment and solid waste.
Waylon suggests that California could save significantly by implementing proactive solutions south of the border, requiring less investment than current projects like Oscar Romo's, although he admits this is easier said than done.
The municipality of Tijuana manages the stormwater, but the state manages the wastewater. And in California, we have so many different boundaries just within the Tijuana River Valley that you have California State Parks, you have the county, you have the city, you have federal partners.
Waylon's new role nowadays is to smoothen the communications between all these agencies that don't see eye to eye all the time.
It's hard to get consensus out of all those groups to really focus on projects that are going to be beneficial.
He and his nonprofit mobilized the Los Laureles community around this approach 10 to 15 years ago. They installed trash barriers, sediment traps, and energized trash collection around repurposing waste.
Creating environmental solutions for the community with the community. Solutions that affects what happens north of the border or downstream of the river.
I think we've been developing it since 2015, but we didn't really have the hydrofinancial modeling done until maybe 2017, 2018. And what that did was kind of prove our concept that depending on what interventions are done upstream, it will have a financial reward downstream. To what varying degree, depends on the intervention. Our models show that a diversified portfolio of interventions is actually the best, so that you can wean out which one works the best and then reinvest in what does.
Waylon started in Los Laureles 15 years ago. He has now expanded his operation to a bigger basin in Mataderos Canyon, east of Los Laureles.
It's definitely allowed us to get more grants because we are expanding something that already has worked. And most investors that we have spoken to want to do a watershed wide. If they're going to put that much, you know, collateral on the line, they want to do it at a much bigger level. They don't want to just do it in one little sub-basin. They want to have a Tijuana River watershed-wide approach. So now we're in the process of building that scale up, and Mataderos is a huge part of that.
Julio and Waylon stopped at Mataderos Canyon to collect a memory card of a camera that he and his partner Napo installed to monitor the basin level in real time.
Security. It's actually up on that pole over there.
Waylon and Julio walked down the canyon towards a 6 meter tall pole that had one of their cameras pointed towards the river.
And so now, at the push of a button, Napo can pull up this camera, and then during rain events, we can plug that into some machine learning and actually quantify some of the data that's necessary to create a hydraulic model.
As Waylon and Julio were walking towards the pole, they were surprised by a change in scenery.
So that's the pole you're talking about right there.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, wow. I eroded it out a lot. Whoa.
So just in the last few rains, it's changed a lot.
A significant amount of debris accumulated on the riverbank after a section of the slope collapsed due to heavy rains.
Where's the camera, Napa? I don't see it there. I hope it's okay. But it's supposed to be on top of there, probably angled down. I think we might have got yoinks. I'm going to call him right now. I'm going to send him a sad poll.
He texted his collaborator, Napo, with the sad news.
Oh, man.
That sucks. Where's our camera, buddy? Well, you know, it's only like our 1500 camera we've lost.
Bummed out but not deterred, Waylon broke down the importance of having those intervention points.
A big intervention that we're promoting and endorsing is having these systems at least in between opportunities where we can put sediment basins and sediment capture systems and trash capture systems, and we can slow down the velocity of the stream flow. We're gonna have to connect everything and connect it to interventions that will be able to slow the water down and capture some of this stuff.
So another camera would have to be installed.
You know, the water board is really pleased with that that trash boom. So Oscar Romo's trash boom that you
I did see some videos about that.
They're saying that it caught in this last rains like 50 tons of trash.
Damn.
For Waylon, Oscar Romo's success helps to bring more spotlight to this cross-border problem.
Waylon is advocating for the same level of intervention at the source, in Tijuana.
Currently, he is working on developing a model to present to agencies and investors, aiming to support interventions on the scale of Oscar Romo's projects.
But how do we keep going up further into the watershed? Rather than still dealing with the channel, I'm not saying that it doesn't need to be done. Saying, how can we be better?
He is confident that the attention Romo's projects have garnered will eventually lead to broader support for interventions across the entire Tijuana watershed.
KPBS On Demand is supported by UC San Diego's Art Power, co-presenting Mayrig with Art of Elan on January 29th at The Loft. Tickets at artpower.ucsd.edu.
You are listening to Port of Entry.
Bueno, bueno. ¿Cómo andas, Eve? Estamos aquí en Laureles ahorita. Vamos a...
Our last stop was a nursery called Las Hormiguitas.
Spanish for the little ants.
I'm going to meet my griñón.
Griñón?
Yeah, my angry old man.
Yeah, he didn't sound too thrilled.
He's just a grumpy old bastard, man. I love him to death.
From inside the property came out Waylon's grumpy old man, Jorge Ibáñez.
Waylon used to live with Jorge back in the day when he was building these brick-and-mortar community projects.
This is Julio Jorge.
¿Qué tal?
Él es un amigo de, recuerdo, Ita y Alan, mis hermanos de trabajar con Adela. Él trabaja con Alan.
Órale.
Yeah. ¿Cómo están? Me gustan su... Look at this little fuzz on the face.
Oh, qué cabrón.
It didn't take that long before their love language took center stage.
Hazing.
They walked through Jorge's nursery. The area looked a bit run down, but well kept.
Tengo como 20 años, más de 20 años trabajando con el video. Es que lo que estamos enseñando aquí a Tijuana es que conozcan la planta nativa.
Jorge has been working on the nursery for over 20 years.
Jorge's approach is twofold. First, teaching the community and the newer generations to appreciate the native plants. And second, to help fight erosion through reforestation of the hillsides. Or as Waylon puts it, hill slope stabilization.
Lo que tiene la planta nativa es a la vez también. es enraizadora, pero es enraizadora para abajo.
Jorge says that native plants lay their roots deeper in their attempt to find water.
Lo que pasa es que la planta nativa busca el agua abajo. Es que cuando llueve, el agua se va abajo y ya tan profundo que esté, la raíz ahí va hasta que lo agarra.
As a result, they grip the land and prevent landslides during rainy seasons.
Un promedio de unas 8 cuadras más o menos. Vamos a poner por cuadras. Y acá abajo también como unas 5 o 6 cuadras también.
They've reforested 32 blocks or about 2 acres on the Laureles hillsides and the hillsides next to Los Laureles.
With the hillside reforestation, the topsoil doesn't erode as easy during the rains.
With plants and trees, the hills are able to absorb the water and slow down the downpour of rain from the hill to keep the dirt in place.
The idea being that if you slow down the flow of water, you slow down the flow of pollution.
With Jorge's help, they were able to plant hundreds of native plants that made the hillsides of Los Laureles less susceptible to landslides.
Palo verde, el ciprés de Tecate, ciruelo sly. Tenemos la yuca.
Some examples of those native plants are yuca, jojoba, laurel sumac, and nopal, among others.
Waylon was following up on a point when he was blindsided by Jorge.
The single-use plastics in particular, we're trying to figure out circular economy goals. Yeah. Well, he's not here to deal with it. It's only our problem now.
You see, Waylon wasn't the only crazy gringo trying to create a positive impact in Los Laureles.
He had a partner in crime.
Stephen Wright.
His late star brother, with whom he shared dreams, outlooks on life, and with whom he founded Four Walls and started this adventure in Los Laureles 15 years ago.
You could ask him about Steve. Steve was his adopted nephew as well.
Back when we were here 6 years ago, Stephen led the tour and Waylon kind of sat in the passenger seat.
No, pues era una chulada de hombre ese muchacho.
Jorge remembers Steve fondly. He was the one who kept Waylon on his toes, pulling his ears when needed, mentions Jorge.
Good dude.
Nunca he conocido aún así como el Steven. Bueno, como los dos pues andaban siempre juntos los dos.
Waylon and Steven were always together, Jorge shared, as he pointed to one of the walls next to the nursery where Steven was immortalized in a mural with his daughter.
Pero el Steve, pues allá mira, allá anda aquella pila, allá le pusieron así en pintura está el Steve en una orilla ya. Y a mí me pusieron en la otra orilla acá.
Stephen passed away in 2022, leaving behind family, friends, and loved ones.
And also, some stuff for Waylon to remember him fondly.
So when we first built the dry toilet here, we were living here and using it, and it was full. We were both wrapping up our stuff, we were both heading our separate ways, and he just was like, all right, see ya. And Jorge's like, you gotta clean out the bathroom before you guys go. So he left me with literally a box of shit and a bunch of piss. And I just remember being so infuriated with him. I'm like, oh, you left at a perfect time. You didn't even help me with cleaning out the bathroom. But
Jorge remembers when they first got to the community. They didn't speak any Spanish. He shared that Steven picked up the language quicker than Waylon did.
And he did. He had the golden tongue, too. He could always speak. In either language, he was very articulate and very.
Jorge retells how Steven would bring surfers down on surfing trips.
Ese Steve me traía también surfistas que venían a ese, pero primero les ponía, los voy a llevar a surfear, pero primero vamos a.
Steven would make it a ritual to stop at Jorge's nursery to help with any project that was being worked on.
These surfers would help out and make a generous donation to the nursery and sometimes to Jorge.
Julio had to ask, what did Waylon bring?
Just nothing, only work.
Before helping to build Adela's workshop, Stephen and Waylon helped prop up Las Hormiguitas. From there, the community took them in.
Yeah, it is gorgeous here, though. I mean, I love it for the place, man. It's like there's no other place like this. You know, I could do this anywhere else. But why? I love it here.
The projects in Los Laureles stand as a testament to the brotherly bond between Steven and Waylon, a connection remembered by the community into which they poured so much of themselves.
Their timeless bond is evident in the enduring structures, maintained by stewards like Adela and Jorge.
So, like, they became family, and I just, they supported all of our craziness. Like, we were just the crazy gringos. Nobody knew why we were down here, and then eventually it just became like, we all have a shared purpose, and you're able to support each other in our work, you know?
Tackling the issues of cross-border pollution may seem like an insurmountable challenge. However, the connections and community-building efforts developed along the way make the task less daunting.
Without the dedicated work of Waylon, Steven, Adela, and Jorge, Los Laureles would look entirely different, and the estuary downstream would be at risk.
Without Oscar Romo's project, even more trash would find its way into the ocean.
They have successfully demonstrated to the governments on both sides that the projects are effective and urgently need to be supported and expanded.
As things were winding down, Julio asked Waylon about Steven.
You know, we were star brothers, so it was like we met 20 years ago on a rugby pitch in Riverside, around the fact that we had the same birthday, same year. He was the funniest, most authentic human being I've ever met in my life. All the growth that we had as individuals and as an organization, I'm seeing it in legislation, I'm seeing it in binational collaboration and coordination, I'm seeing it in the relationships that, you know, we formed 15 years ago coming to light around people and that we connected with when we first started, and now we're crossing paths in different professional positions, and it's like the synergy and the magic continues.
Have you asked yourself how to honor his legacy?
It's just loving his kids, bro. It's like making sure that our families grow together, and making sure that I stay true to myself. Steve always had my back. He always had more faith in me than I had in myself. It wasn't until he passed that I think I was able to truly accept not only the legacy that we created together, but the legacy that he, as a man, created in his community and in this region. And now, like, here we are, you know, still having like all this momentum around our work, and it's like I'm still watering the seeds that we planted. So it's an honor. It's an honor to continue the legacy and watch his kids grow and watch our work grow as well.
Steven's legacy is intricately woven into every gully, riverbank, and basin where he and Waylon cared to make a difference.
With heartfelt dedication, Waylon ensures that the same care and love that defined his friendship with Steven are infused into every project, every intervention, and every community effort he undertakes in the Tijuana-San Diego watershed. This episode is dedicated to the loving memory of Steven Wright.
This episode of Port of Entry was written and produced by Julio Cesar Ortiz Franco.
Adrian Villalobos is technical producer and sound designer.
Ben Redlosk is our media production specialist.
This episode was edited by Elizabeth Hames and Elma Gonzalez Lima Brandao.
Lisa Jane Morissette is director of audio programming and operations.
For those of you that don't know, when I'm not hosting the show, I play in a cross-border band called Tu Lengua, and coincidentally, we just released an album called Basura, Trash. It's all about taking the trash out of your life, from your emotions, your relationships, metaphorically and literally. Some of that music is played in this episode, so if you like it, go ahead and look up Tu Lengua everywhere you listen to music. Soy Alan Iliental.
Y yo soy Natalie González.
Nos vemos pronto. Basura.
KPBS On Demand is supported by ACLU of San Diego and Imperial Counties. The work of the ACLU is about closing the gap between the America that was promised and the America that is. Learn more at www.aclu-sdic.org.